Set your course for the Hoth
Takes podcast.
Welcome to Hoth Takes. I'm Eric Geller.
I'm Grace Seegers.
And I'm Haley Bird-Wilt.
And we're talking in this episode about Andor Season 2, our hopes, our expectations. We got the release date for the second season just a few weeks ago as we sit down here to record Hoth Takes. Season 2 coming out April 22nd, 2025. So it does feel like we're a long ways off, but given how long we've already waited, I think we can wait a few more months. We did get an official synopsis for the second season, and it basically says what you would expect. We're going to see Cassian transform from, quote, soldier to leader to hero on the way to his epic destiny, unquote. So we're going to see his relationships with his group of allies and enemies intensify. That's the word they use in the synopsis. And they also have some nice cryptic rewarding phrases like everyone will be tested, and as the stakes rise, the betrayals, sacrifices, and conflicting agendas will become profound. And I gotta say, I was not excited about this season until I heard that the agendas would become profound. So I'm very relieved to hear that that's going to happen here. And just to remind folks, we do know that there's going to be a different way of approaching this season from a time perspective. We're going to get 3-episode blocks that each cover between 3 and 8 days, according to Tony Gilroy. And then in between each of those blocks, there's going to be a 1-year time jump. So we'll have to see how that works, whether it feels refreshing, whether it feels rushed. One of the things I've heard folks talking about is, are we still going to have time for mundane but character-building scenes like Cyril eating the cereal at home with his mom? Or is it going to be all meat and no fat, or no, you know, little bonus fluff scenes like that? So we'll have to find out what happens there. Let's start by talking about the journey that our main character, our hero, is going on in the season. I mentioned that Disney is teasing this idea of him going from thief to soldier to leader to hero. And I would love to hear from the two of you what you hope that looks like. Obviously, we know where he ends up. That's not the point of this show, but the point is to see how he gets there. Grace, maybe we can start with you. What are you hoping to see tonally and emotionally from Cassian Andor in the second season?
Well, first of all, it's not that long of a wait. It's only at recording, what, 159 days? Those will just fly by. I thought that marketing of him as like how he turns into a hero is kind of interesting, because I wouldn't consider Cassian to be your traditional kind of hero. Even in Rogue One, he's more anti-hero vibey. He's willing to get his hands dirty. He's definitely doing things for a cause and for a noble cause, and has sacrificed everything for it. But it's very much he's living the life that Luthen has outlined in his season 1 monologue about making his mind a sunless place and using the tools of my enemy to defeat them. Like, that's very much where we see Cassian in Rogue One. So I'm interested about this framing of him as a hero, because I don't really think of him as a traditional sort of unambiguous good guy. He's gonna kill Jin's dad in Rogue One. He has a cause, he has a noble cause, but he's willing to get a little rough and tumble with it. So I presume that we will be continuing to see that development of him from thief to, you know, still kind of overall sketchy dude, but using his sketchy powers for good rather than evil, or rather good rather than, you know, self-interest rather. I'm really just hoping that it's going to be the same quality as season 1, and that's hard to predict. But I like you were saying, Eric, I really hope that they hold on to some of those key character moments that made season 1 so special, like Luthen putting on his wig and practicing, you know, how he looks and appears when he's on Coruscant, or like the in the I episode, the villagers and their rituals and beliefs around the I. And yeah, I hope we still get some of that humanity.
One thing that just came to mind, just listening to you answer all of that, which I agree with a lot of what you're saying, Grace, especially about sort of like the moral complexity of his character. And this is not a like typical hero, at least in like the Disney kind of world of films and movies. But one thing that did come to mind is I feel like in the first season there was the flashback story arc. And I'm not sure if that totally was finished or completed. I feel like he's still looking for his sister. And so when you ask like what I'm hoping to see of like for his character, I would like to see that storyline resolved in some way instead of kind of just like dangling it out there. And then, you know, it seems like the kind of thing that might be kind of condensed if they're making this a 2-season show instead of a 5-season show.
Yeah, I go back and forth on whether they're going to pay that off. Part of me thinks like it's a weird thing to introduce if you're not going to pay it off. And then part of me thinks we've been conditioned to expect that every kind of like throwaway theme in a story is going to be paid off in some big way where it all comes full circle and it's neatly wrapped up. And maybe the sister is like an inquisitor now or something like that, right? Like something that is like where it really feels, oh, this is earned. This is weighty. This is now important. And I don't necessarily know that Tony Gilroy thinks that way about this particular story. And they have... I'm pretty sure Tony Gilroy has kind of given mixed signals about whether the sister thing is going to come back into play. Obviously, if it is going to come back into play, there's a reason he's being cagey about it. So we'll have to wait and see what happens there. For me, the big thing is really going back to what the synopsis says about his journey. I want to see how he wrestles with balancing the different elements of being a fighter in this era and being somebody that other people will follow. On the one hand, you have, you know, Nemec's idealism and the idea of committing to a cause. And on the other hand, you have Luthen's pragmatism and the idea of being willing to do what you have to do for that cause. It's not just about the ideology. It's about winning. It's about victory, because victory has consequences, and so does defeat. And you need to be ready to sacrifice people in order to go down the road that leads to victory. And of course, we see him do that at the beginning of Rogue One. So how are we going to get to that version of Cassian Andor? It's not like he's afraid to kill people. I mean, he started the whole show that way. But we need to see him grow to the point where it really takes something out of him to kill somebody, but he knows he has to do it for the cause, because I think that's what we see at the beginning of Rogue One. So I'm personally hoping for a really interesting and meaty journey to that point. Although, again, I think this disjointed storytelling of like a jump of 1 year in between these blocks, it's going to be very interesting to see how they try to connect up the growth that we see from him in these blocks. Because when, you know, a 1 year of time passage can change people a lot, and there's things that are going to happen to him in between when we see him. And I'm curious to see how they're going to make it feel like we're not missing those key moments in his life.
I'm actually not too worried about that, because I think that time jumps, I'm kind of mixed on time jumps. So when they're used effectively, I think that they can be fine. When it does feel as if some of the development has been unearned, that's when it's worrying. But there's a show that the three of us watch, For All Mankind, which famously in between seasons does like 10-year time jumps, which after the first season is really jarring. And it's really interesting to see, though, as the new season starts, the way that the characters have been developing in the time that you haven't seen them. And generally it's in ways that feel pretty natural, and where you're like, okay, I'm glad we skipped ahead to this point, because that's a lot of backstory to get in. So I think if it's well written enough, the time jump isn't necessarily going to be a problem or going to be disjointed, particularly if they are self-contained stories. Because in the first season, there really were several self-contained arcs. Like there was the Aldani arc, the prison arc. The episodes were connected, but they Like, there could have been time jumps between those ones as well. There weren't, but there could have been. So I'm actually not too worried about that, because I generally trust Tony Gilroy, and that isn't a red flag for me automatically.
It is a red flag for me because I want more content of this show. I am very sad that it has been cut down to only 2 seasons. I feel like one listener of Hoth Takes was complaining that we did so many Andor episodes to me once, and that I feel like it was the right number of Andor episodes because it was such a good show. and it's just like the gold standard of writing in Star Wars.
Huge agree.
This current era. So I would love to see more, but I understand that everybody has their own lives and they don't want to be working on the same project forever. So I feel like I'm coming into it like already slightly disappointed that it's not as long as I thought it would be, but I'm sure he'll do it well. Tony Gilroy has shown like his decision making is superb, and his the writing is going to be there. So yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
That is a good point though, Haley, that I am also bummed already that it's only 2 seasons and was really hoping that it would be more. And this is the second show that I've been really into that I've watched recently where there's like a 3-year waiting period between seasons and then there's only 2 seasons and you're like, well, I want more. That sucks. The other show, by the way, is Arcane. And it's very good. But you're kind of almost going into it disappointed because you wanted more and now it feels like they're not going to have as much time to wrap it up, and like, will they really be able to commit to the story that they set out?
Speaking of Cassian Andor, we are going to see him meet K2SO and become friends with him in this season, and Alan Tudyk, the wonderful Alan Tudyk, is coming back as K2SO. And my question, apart from will the timing of their meeting respect the canon depiction of their meeting from a one-shot comic book that was a tie-in to Rogue One. I'm sure Tony Gilroy will feel beholden to a one-shot comic book from the promotional material for Rogue One.
You have to tell us, people who don't read the comic books, what the like canon meeting story is.
Ah, you know, this would have been really, really great as a payoff if I remembered it. I don't. But there is a one-shot comic where I think it's just called Cassian and K2SO because Star Wars people are great at naming things. But I think he's like on a mission and he meets K2SO on a planet somewhere and like reprograms him there, and like they almost kill each other and then he reprograms him. I'm not sure. I looked it up. It was published in August of 2017, long enough ago that I'm sure Tony Gilroy has never heard of it. And as I said, I'm not expecting them to faithfully retell that comic here. But my big question is, is this going to be like a love at first sight, they meet and he immediately reprograms him, or is there going to be some like antagonism, some long running thing where, you know, the whole like episode is kind of them, again, it could be kind of like the comic, like stuck on a planet somewhere. Like, how quickly do we go from he is an antagonist Imperial droid to like he's on the team? Because again, to go back to like it's 12 episodes, they don't have a ton of time to draw out this emotional bond between the two of them and show the conversion of K2SO.
Yeah, that would feel like a waste to me, unless they're going to do it so well. But it's like there's already so many characters I want to see like their story arcs wrapped up, and I know how K2SO's ends. So I don't know.
And of course, Cassian's also going to reunite with Bix and his other friends who were last seen escaping Ferrix on a transport ship. I was thinking about this earlier. Do I have any like strong feelings about this? Is there anything I'm really hoping for? I don't know. I mean, there, you know, Bix at least is a very important person in his life. Do you guys like, is there anything you're really hoping to see from that reunion, or anything that like you want it to kind of do for Cassian's character? Because I guess ultimately that's kind of what a lot of this is really just about.
So I know it is called Andor and is about Andor's character, but I would like to dispute the premise of your question. And I would actually like to see Bix's development entirely separate from Cassian. I like the actress who plays her, Adria Arjona. And I think that we didn't really get a lot of her character in season one. The first half was very much her plot line was very much connected to the men in her life, whether it was Cassian or was his name, her boyfriend. And he had two, it wasn't Ted with two D's. It was Tim. Tim with two M's, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Tim with two M's. And I personally, like the end of it, when she was being tortured by Deidre and was sort of like existing in her own private hell, that seems like a really radicalizing moment. And I would really like to see her development just completely absent whatever Cassian is doing. Does she become a rebel now? What does that look like? Are their interactions defined now by the rebellion and not by their previous relationship? That's what I would be far more interested in. I'm not really, like, I'm not invested in them having a reunion as a relationship. I'm far more interested to see whether she actually gets a character development that is more fulsome than what we saw in season one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not opposed to that. My kind of expectation is that in a time-constrained environment, that will probably be a low-priority thing for them to do. But like I said, you know, I am interested in seeing where she goes. I mean, you know, the trauma that she went through, the fact that she was very much one of those, like, just get-along-to-go-along people. She wasn't, like, she wasn't raring to go and join the rebellion. Like, I would be curious to see what this experience being tortured does for her sense of, like, how she's spending her time in the world. Her, you know, does she have now an indignant sense of, like, I need to fight back? I definitely am interested to see it. I guess if I'm predicting, though, I'm not anticipating we're going to get a ton of it. But you never know.
Why are we feeling so pessimistic? Is it really just like the timing of...
I wouldn't even call it pessimism per se. I mean, I guess I'm pessimistic about seeing more Bix. I don't know that I'm pessimistic about Andor season two as like a product. I guess I'm not expecting them to have a ton of time for things that are not core to the ethos of the show, which is like telling Cassian's story. It's not that I'm not interested in it. I'm just not anticipating they have a lot of time for it.
Well, I also, even though it is called Andor and Cassian's the main character, I don't think that only focusing on Cassian is even what happened in season one, because you also had a lot of what was happening with Luthen. You had Mon Mothma's plotline, you had Vel's plotline, and Cinta, and you had some of the flashback stuff going on. Like, it wasn't just the all Cassian all the time show in season one. There were definitely other plot lines. You had the Imperials and their creepy little board meetings and Cyril and Deidre. And so I actually, you know, I'm not hopeful about Bix getting more developed, because I'm never hopeful about female characters getting developed, just in general, like as a rule, because otherwise you'll most likely be disappointed. Thankfully, Andor season one had some really great and well-developed female characters, so I'm less trepidatious, but it's more just like, you know, never hold out hope for a female character being well-developed, because, you know, this is the world. But I think that you are being too pessimistic, Eric, to be like, they're not going to be able to put all of it in this short amount of time, because, yeah, maybe they're not, but it's not like season one was only Cassian's story.
That's true. And that's actually a good segue to talking about some of the other characters who are front and center in the show. I would love to hear your expectations for Mon Mothma. What we know is going to happen is that she ends up leaving the Imperial Senate, declaring the Rebel Alliance, and inviting the oppressed peoples of the galaxy to join the fight against the Empire. What we don't know is exactly how it's going to happen in canon. We know that in Star Wars Rebels, the ghost crew helps her escape when she goes on the run. We know that one of the galvanizing moments for her, and I believe it was actually referenced in Rebels, and so I think it's canon, is the Gorman Massacre, which is a huge Imperial reprisal against a protest movement that in Legends was the work of Grand Moff Tarkin. I don't know what happens in canon, but we know that that's a galvanizing moment for her. Will we see it in Andor? Will we have references beyond the season one reference to Gorman? Is that kind of turning point going to be what we expect it to be? I would love your predictions. What do you think we're going to see from Mon Mothma? And what is her journey of radicalization? You know, how brutal is it going to get?
I feel like what I would like to see is, it was definitely like a centerpiece of the first season, kind of exploring like when is rebellion justified. And I like being an American, like America was founded because of a rebellion. And so I've thought about this a lot. Just because of like my work and the current moment that we live in, you hear a lot of like sort of radical people online talking about civil war very casually. I feel like what Andor does really well is like examine those moral questions it recognizes the messiness of it. And I feel like with Star Wars, the tendency can be to make it simpler than it is in real life, because like there's a bad guy there's an evil force at the head of the Empire, and so it makes that answer a lot easier to find. But I feel like with Mon Mothma, she's not aware of all of that, and is kind of like on a journey of discovering it. So I look forward to like seeing her make those calculations as she like discovers more and decides to get bolder. And I don't personally want to see like the massacre that you're talking about, Eric, but like if that's like the impetus for it, like it seems like it's really ripe for good storytelling.
Yeah, I think we are seeing at the end Mon Mothma, the end of season one, Mon Mothma compromising some of her morals and beliefs and figuring out exactly what the rebellion will require. And something I thought was really interesting was how that was presented in her relationship with her daughter, and this very strained relationship that she has with her daughter and her husband, and thinking, are they going to dive into how being a rebel leader is going to further strain those relationships? Because presumably once she like is spirited away out of Coruscant and becomes a fugitive, she's no longer going to have contact with her daughter or her husband. I mean, her husband kind of sucked, so I feel like she's not going
to
be real.
The exchange for like fighting for freedom is leaving her daughter to be like married off as a child bride. Is that what we're going to see in season
exactly?
Two?
Yeah. Like, are we going to see her wrestle with that at all? And sort of how she is very much allowing not just her personal life to be sacrificed, but also her daughter's life. That'll be really interesting. And we saw also, you know, her daughter was more interested in the traditional systems, but she's also like 13, and you can't really trust a 13-year-old to be like, yeah, I want to be a child bride. that's not really a really reliable source there. So I'll be very interested to see whether that those family issues continue to come up and whether that continues to be a sort of external representation of the moral challenges that Mon has as she tries to figure out that balance between being a leader and being like a person and a family.
Yeah, I can't wait for to like read the note that she leaves Perrin when she like flees to become a rebel leader. Like, I hope we get a nice over the shoulder shot of him reading the letter. Where it's like, I never liked your cooking anyway. But I do think that when we see her at the end of season one, realizing that you do have to start entering into that gray space, right? I mean, for folks who don't remember, she basically plants this rumor that Perrin has gambling debts as a way to cover up her financial transactions. I think that we're going to see sort of a descent into the muck from Mon Mothma in season two. We're going to see her start to do things that she previously thought of as just off limits. But we're going to, if it's any indication, season one is any indication, I think it's going to be very clear that she's kind of pushed into it. It's not like she's just sitting there with her thoughts and thinking, maybe I'll do this, maybe I'll you know, become, you know, play a little bit more in that gray space. I think necessity is going to push her to do these things, you know, and sort of pushing the line a little bit further every time until you turn around and you realize that, you know, you're in this territory you never thought you'd be in. You don't recognize yourself anymore. This is not a show that's shying away from the grittiness of the so-called good guys. This is a show that embraces the fact that sometimes in order to accomplish that sort of mission of like victory for the light side, you have to be kind of a bad person a little bit. And I'm not saying Mon Mothma is going to become Luthen Rael, but I think we're going to see her in a light that we haven't seen from her before. And I'm excited for that, because to me, that doesn't tarnish Mon Mothma's grandeur or her stature. It just makes her more of a real person. And it means when you see her in subsequent stories like Return of the Jedi, you have a different appreciation for everything she's had to do to get to that moment and all the choices that she's had to make in order to even have a chance of victory like the Battle of Endor. It makes that more powerful when you've seen what she's had to go through.
I do think it's kind of great how she's in... Where does she first show up? Is it Return of the Jedi, or is she in... A New Hope?
Her first appearance is Return of the Jedi.
That's what I thought. So like, she's in Return of the Jedi for like 5 seconds, and just the way that her character has been developed over 4 decades almost is kind of really interesting to me. It's been like 41 years, actually, like over the past 41 years, to be from like many Bothans died to get us this information, like a kind of meme one liner, to being like this was the face and the political acumen behind the rebellion. I just think that's a fascinating, from a meta storytelling standpoint, that's really fascinating.
Totally agree. And an example of how you can do interesting things with Star Wars, even if you don't have access to the original actor and you can't tell a story with that person in live action that is set after the story, you can go back and tell stories that enrich the viewing experience. And, you know, thank God that we're still able to work with, what is her name? The actress who plays Mon Mothma.
Genevieve Riley.
Yeah, thank God that Genevieve O'Reilly is still, number one, like, able to play the role, and number two, interested in playing the role, because it allows for really just wonderful, rich stories like this. But I mentioned Luthen Rael, and let's talk about Luthen, because the big elephant in the room here for season two is that we don't see him after Andor. He's not in any of the Rebel Command briefing scenes in Rogue One or A New Hope or anything after that. So the question, of course, is what happens to Luthen? Building on that, I guess my question to the two of you is, how much do you expect we will learn about his past? How much is that going to play a role in his story? Because oftentimes when you have a long-running character in a multi-season show and they're getting to the point of being killed off or whatever, they will do kind of like backward-looking stories about how they became the person they are as part of like a send-off. And this is not quite the same thing because it's only 2 seasons and we basically just met him. But do you think that as part of wrapping up his story, we are going to delve deep into his past, or is that not really important to Tony Gilroy? I guess it's hard to predict, but what do you think?
I would much rather we not actually learn anything about him. I mean, if we get a Luthen backstory, I'm sure it'll be interesting. My preference would be that they not CGI de-age Stellan Skarsgård, because I hate CGI de-aging. It freaks me out. You know, if we got one, a backstory episode, I'm sure it'd be fine. But I think he's actually a much more interesting character if we know absolutely nothing about him and he's just this guy who showed up and for his own reasons is living this chameleonic life. And I think it'd be very in keeping with his character not to learn anything about him. What I really do not want to happen is I do not want to get an extensive Luthen backstory where we also learn he's a Jedi, because I don't want him to be a Jedi, and I understand that the hints have been laid, the breadcrumbs for those who wish to pick them up. But if they are actual breadcrumbs and not just like specks on the floor, I'm going to ignore them because I don't want him to be a Jedi and I don't want to know more about him. So that's really my very basic boring opinion is I'd love to see Luthen and what he continues to do in the now and the role that he continues to play, particularly as Cassian's mentor, learning more about his relationships with like Vel and with Clea and with Mon, and you know, just seeing him more as this spider in the web, twitching all of these threads, but I would really rather not learn anything about who he was before.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to learn more. I just, I agree with you, Grace. I don't want him to be a Jedi. I like the idea of it kind of being like a bait and switch where we think he's going to be and then he's not. I would be okay if he's like a Mandalorian or something, like if we have to throw in some like well-known like background. But I feel like, I don't know, I feel like it would not be in keeping with the show to like bring in that kind of story arc. But I feel like Eric is going to disagree on this one.
No, I totally agree. I mean, I don't want this show to bring in, first of all, I just like the idea of the show staying entirely away from Jedi, just like separate from whatever happens to Luthen. I like the fact that the show has succeeded beyond everybody's wildest dreams without touching on this sort of tentpole sci-fi fantasy concept of a Jedi and without going into all that spiritual mythology and stuff. I like that we're showing you can tell a great story without going anywhere near those characters. But then secondly, specifically on Luthen, I think his character works really well as just a guy who saw what was happening around him and started to fight back. I think it takes something away to say he was a Jedi and Order 66 happened and he was on the run, and so that's kind of a motivation for him fighting back. Like, those people exist out there, and that's great for the characters we know who have that story. But this is a person who, to my eye, has had a different entree into the fight. And that's just obviously me speculating because we don't know he's not a Jedi. But I want him to have that kind of journey where he's just a regular person. I think this show works well because it shows how people who don't have powers can pick up the metaphorical sword and join the fight. And I want Luthen to be one of those people. I want him to be, in many ways, a regular guy who is able to achieve extraordinary success with his rebel cell and whatever comes next without mystical powers. So I don't want him to be a Jedi, for sure.
Something I'm interested in seeing, I don't know if you guys watched the teaser trailer that came out a couple of weeks ago, but in the teaser trailer for season 2 of Andor, they have, you know, somebody doing a voiceover talking about the Ezra Bridger recording, which we know from watching Rebels and being Rebels fans, that, you know, in season 1 Ezra does this recording that's like, let's galvanize the rebellion, yay. And it's
that's a direct quote, right?
that's a direct quote, yes. The enthusiastic yay is a really important part of it. But like, my mom, for example, who Andor is the only Star Wars thing she likes, and she has not seen Rebels, if she watched that, she would be like, who the heck is Ezra Bridger? I mean, well, I guess, no, she didn't watch Ahsoka. So she would be like, who the heck is Ezra Bridger? What's happening here? So something I'm really interested in seeing, I thought that was such a weird little thing to throw in such a show that really kind of prides itself on being pretty standalone. So do we think it is going to do the classic Disney Star Wars crossovers type situation? Like, are we going to see more of that sort of like bringing of other characters into this world? And obviously it's all set in the same world. Yeah, you want to see Ezra?
I hope to see Ezra in a show that like highlights how cool Ezra actually is. and I was slightly disappointed by Ahsoka, so I would not be opposed to him having a cameo in Andor. How old
would he be?
He's like 14, I think, 15.
Okay, so like you can't use the same actor, I guess. That kind of, I don't know. So maybe not.
I just thought it was weird because it's like, why bring it up if you're not going to incorporate it somehow? And then why put it in the teaser trailer? It just seemed very odd to me.
Yeah, I think it would be cool, but I also think it's one of those things that Tony Gilroy like would see as an Easter egg. Like, I was going to say that the Glup, you know, last name, which we can't say because it's a swear word, but that guy, right? The idea that a lot of people are watching this show who are not huge Star Wars fans, and putting something in there that is like meant to be seen as, it's that guy with the music and the camera angles or whatever, I think that would fall flat, and I don't think Tony Gilroy would do that, and I'm not anticipating that at all. But I think it's hard to bring Ezra in without doing that, unless it's very brief and very unpretentious and just unsentimental, in which case, why even do it? Like, I was actually kind of surprised by that when you mentioned it, Grace, from the teaser, because it feels like something that Tony Gilroy wouldn't do.
Yeah, exactly. That's why it kind of struck me as odd. And, you know, you never know, because Tony Gilroy's in all likelihood not the one putting together the teaser trailer. That is a very different job. And so whoever is putting together the teaser trailer is probably like, you know, the people, they just saw Ahsoka. They know who Ezra Bridger is. So maybe that's the thinking behind it. I just thought it was kind of a weird way to start off a trailer with the first footage for a show that we haven't seen in years.
So the question about Luthen then is, what's going to happen at the end? Will he die? Will he just slink away into the shadows? This to me is one of the biggest question marks, because he's the biggest new character. He's the only really top tier, and I'm not talking here about Cyril and Dedra, like really top tier big three character whose fate we don't know coming out of the show. And, you know, we've talked about kind of what's going to happen with him when we did our season one episodes. Just to refresh folks' mind, my prediction here is that we're going to see Mon kind of throw him to the wolves as a way of showing us that she has learned to play the game that he's been telling her that she's bad at, and she's going to start to get good at it, and kind of push him out, whether, you know, it's to his death or just to his, you know, detriment in some other way, because he kind of represents the old guard of the uprising. He is that kind of unpolished, kind of almost feral rebellion figurehead, or not figurehead, but leader. And we know from history that when you have an uprising like this, when you have a revolution, there is a first phase and a second phase, and there's almost a backlash to the first phase in the second phase from people who think that the people in the first phase didn't go far enough or are not the right people for the moment. Obviously, we're not going to see Luthen topple the Empire, so that's not what we're talking about in terms of Phase 1 and Phase 2. But I think Phase 2 here, especially when Mon leaves the Senate, has to shift to a bit more open, diplomatic, you know, almost like sort of public diplomacy, right? Advertising the rebellion to the galaxy and saying, join us and here's why. I don't think Luthen's the right person for that. And I think Mon knows it, and I think we're going to see her kind of push him aside and say, you know, your time has come and gone. And Tony Gilroy has talked about this, that we're going to see this in season two, this idea that the people who are the most passionate at the beginning are often left by the wayside at the end. So the question for me is just, how exactly does that happen? But that's just my guess.
I think there are also really interesting historical parallels as well, where often the leaders of a rebellion or counterinsurgent force, the ones who are initial leaders and accomplish a lot of successes, however bloody they might be, but from their perspectives, who accomplish a lot of victories through violence, are then pushed aside in favor of the politicians as time goes on. And it's the politicians who then renounce the violent ways of the leaders who helped get them there in the first place. So I think you're probably right, Eric. I would expect to see some sort of that political maneuvering. And like I said, there are just a lot of historical examples that we can look to where that has been the case. Another sort of biblical comparison could be like Moses and Joshua. Like the Moses will get you out of Egypt, but doesn't complete the job. It's Joshua who gets you out of the desert. So there are definitely different phases, as you said, of a rebellion. I think what I would be most satisfied with if Mon does betray him in some way or push him out is if she does kind of what we saw the character saw Guerrera do in season one, where he basically sacrifices a group of rebels for what he sees as the greater good. And if Mon somehow sacrifices Luthen up to the Imperials, I think that would be a very sort of delicious character arc, even as it would also be very dark.
Yeah, I feel like what like stood out about his monologue was that it was like very I don't know who said this, and I haven't read that much Shakespeare to say this, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I think one of us said it felt like a Shakespeare like moment. And I feel like if he, with like listening to y'all talk about this, if this is his character arc, it would be satisfying for me if the rebellion like would not have happened without him, and he somehow ends up like totally forgotten in the shadows and like with no say in what happens next. I feel like that would almost be more tragic for him than like death at the hands of the Imperials or like being captured or even being betrayed by Mon Mothma. Is just like to be forgotten and to have no like real power anymore.
Yeah, that's also a really good point.
But it would be kind of, I mean, it's a bummer. I don't usually like sad stories, but like it would fit with the writing of the first season and just like the excellent acting skills that we know he has.
And it kind of plays into what he said about like, I'm never going to get the glory of being a hero. Like, I've done things to advance the cause of the light, but I've had to do it in the shadows. And that's tragic enough when it's just like he's never going to be famous as a hero. It's kind of even more tragic when he potentially in season two meets some kind of ignominious end, right? When he is, you know, maybe killed in a way where people don't hear about it, or like in some way he doesn't get a glorious you know, death in a blaze of fire kind of ending, right? This idea that like he has done so much and yet he doesn't even get the hero's sacrifice at the end. I think that would add a layer of tragedy to his story, which would be rich and welcome from a franchise that doesn't often go that far into kind of dark and tragic circumstances. There's a lot of violence, there's a lot of death, but this is a level of kind of emotional pain that I don't think we see a lot from how characters end their journeys. So we've talked about the idea that maybe Mon will serve Luthen up to the Imperials, and that would certainly be satisfying for one Imperial who has unbeknownst to her, been tracking him this whole time. I'm talking, of course, about Dedra Miro, and she's going to have a very interesting second season because joining the cast of Andor for season two is Ben Mendelsohn, who will be returning as his Rogue One character, Orson Krennic. Grace, obviously very excited about that, and I will say I am too. We know from an interview that Ben Mendelsohn did with Empire magazine that he's going to have at least one run-in with Dedra Miro, and I'm very interested to see how that goes, because Dedra is a character who, you know, on some level, we were rooting for it just as, like, she's competent and she's surrounded by incompetent people, and we want to see what's going to happen. And on another level, there were people who were like, yeah, you go, girl, which I think
we love a girl boss. Gaslight Gatekeep girl boss.
Absolutely a girl boss. But then
hashtag
you know,
feminism.
Okay, well, I think we might have watched a different season one. I don't know that I could co-sign a hashtag feminism on that one. I certainly don't think Bix would co-sign a hashtag feminism on that one. But
women putting down other women, you hate to see it.
You truly do, and it doesn't even pass the Bechdel test, because they're both talking about Andor, or I guess they're both talking about Luthen. Anyway, but Krennic is also somebody who is very, like, he projects an air of competence surrounded by incompetent people. So it's kind of it's rich to imagine the two of them coming together, because they're both strong-willed. They're both people who see people beneath them as, like, you are a tool for me, and I don't have to spare you the time of day. Right now, Krennic is obviously above Dedra, so it's going to be interesting to see how she handles that. But I'm really excited to see Dedra come back, and not just for her own journey, but how it intersects with Krennic's and bringing in this new face, or at least new for Andor and new for Dedra, how that affects her journey. And I got to point this out, because this was all over Star Wars Twitter. Apparently, in the Empire Magazine article, which I have not read, Mendelsohn talks about Krennic's sort of purpose in season two. And apparently his whole deal is we know that he's spearheading the Death Star project. And apparently his job is to raise money to build the Death Star because it's behind schedule and over budget. Now, if you know anything about the Hoth Takes co-host, you know that the people that we follow on Twitter are having a ball talking about what this is going to look like in terms of all these meetings with superiors and, you know, getting his KPIs and doing his PowerPoint presentations where he has the little chart about expenses and he has to justify continuing to throw money into this money pit. I'm really hoping for some imperial bureaucratic minutia, but what about the two of you?
I think one of the best parts of Andor season one was the bureaucratic minutia and getting to see how the ISB operates. I thought that was really fun, and I can only hope that the same can be said for season two. You didn't mention this, Eric, but I am interested to see the continued development of her relationship, Dedra's relationship with Cyril, who, you know, I know Haley is a romance lover, but not in this case, if they embark on a romance, it's going to be real creepy and real weird. And I am intrigued to see how their relationship continues to develop. Like, is he going to just continue to follow her around like a kicked puppy? Is he her new number one? Is there something going on there? I certainly hope not. The only romance I really care about in Andor is Vel and Cinta. I would love to see more of them and their little rebellion romance. Deidre and Cyril, not a romance I'm super interested in. Like, beyond the character implications, but I would hate to, like, I think if I saw them kiss, I would actually physically cringe.
I mean, okay, I think it could be done well, but it would be distressing.
Yes, exactly. Like, it could be done well, but I would be, like, you know, hiding behind my hands.
And part of the question is, does Tony Gilroy want us to experience that? Does he want...
He might.
Because part of the show is, like, the Imperials are real people. They exist inside a bureaucracy. They are doing things for reasons beyond being mustache-twirling supervillains, right? So does the romantic attraction of pursuing the same enemy, you know, cause sparks to fly in a way that is not appealing to us as people who aren't rooting for them, but is perhaps realistic? Are we going to see some Imperial smooching in this season?
It's possible. I'm not against it as a concept, and I feel like you're right. It would show, like, people being caught up in the moment of a shared goal. And I feel like there is grounds for it after Cyril was right, by the way. Like, he was correct. I feel like he was warning them all about something. I need to rewatch it. But I feel like he was calling, like, predicting what was going to happen on Andor's home planet correctly. And he shows up there in her hour of need to help save her. So, I don't know. It's possible I can see them doing that. But it would be like, you know, The Office wants you to be uncomfortable. It would be like that. To, like, show, like, this is not a good thing, but this is, like, a perceptive glimpse into humanity. I don't want to dwell on that too much, but yes, we can discuss it more if it ever happens. I would not see it as a romance as much as like a horror story. But I do feel like you said, Grace, one of the best things about season one was, like, the bureaucracy. And what I really want to see is more, like, all hands meetings, because, and, like, there's, like, sullen faces, and, like, one bureaucrat is, like, his face is all ashy because someone, he goes gray, and, like, because someone calls him out on some mistake he made, and there's, like, a guy, and he's, like, you know, he's got a furrowed brow, and like, I love that. I love
you love furrowed brows. You're here for
give
the furrowed
me the
brows.
Furrowed brow old man talking about the budget, and we need like we need people to do this and that bureaucratic. Like it was fun. I would like to see a little bit more of that. It's like the evil of the ordinary. I like that.
Yeah, the banality of evil.
There it is. Yeah. You're more educated than me, Grace.
You gave me Kierkegaard to read. You can't say that.
I'll tell you what I want to see. I want to see Krennic leading a meeting about why he needs more resources. And Dedra is sitting there. She's just as bored as can be. And the person next to her hands her a note. And she's like, what is this? And she opens it. And it in like the worst handwriting you've ever seen, it says, do you like me? And there's a yes checkbox and a no checkbox. And she looks up across the table at Cyril. And he studiously avoids her gaze. That's what I want to see.
What if she looks at the camera like she's on The Office?
And then and then the Curb music just starts playing?
Yeah, exactly. The Veep theme song, like
yes.
It slides to the back half of the screen. Yeah.
I am curious, though, if Cyril is going to rise through the ranks because, as you pointed out, Hadley, he was right in warning what Luthen was capable of and what Andor was capable of. And the Empire is not the most competent organization, but I think some people within the Empire are capable of noticing individuals who are succeeding above their station, particularly people who have success in this kind of role already, even if it ended not so well. He didn't end his career as a security official with the most successful mission, but, you know, Dedra doesn't, I mean, coming out of the Ferrix disaster, Dedra's not looking so good. So could we actually see Cyril perhaps benefit from that in some way if people pay attention to the fact that he kind of called it? And if they had listened to him, things would have gone perhaps very differently. I guess it's impossible to know for sure, but I am curious to see if there's a power dynamic shift between the two of them because they so effectively set up one dynamic in season one. And I think it would be refreshing if, due to the vagaries of Imperial favor...
Now.
Yeah, if there's a power dynamic shift, maybe not to that extent, but I think it would be really interesting to see them, both each of them be in the other's shoes in terms of how they're feeling and how the power structure is treating them. All right, let's talk about the long shots, the things that may not necessarily be front and center, but things that we're looking for, hoping for, curious about. My big question going into season two is, will there be other characters pulled into the Andor universe other than Krennic and K2SO? And I'm not counting like Mon Mothma, obviously she's in season one, but I think there's a potential as we start to move toward the organized Rebel Alliance that we could see other characters we've previously met. And here I'm thinking about folks like the Organas, Rebel leaders like, you know, Jan Dodonna, who is in A New Hope, maybe even Admiral Ackbar, would love to see him earlier in the timeline. You don't have to bring in the big names, the Luke Skywalker, I mean, he wouldn't be in this, he wouldn't be in play at this point, but people of his caliber, you don't have to bring them in. You can bring in second tier people who are still going to get the reaction of, wow, that's really cool. That person is here. I would love to know if the two of you have any thoughts about people that we could see or that you want to see in season two.
Someone's going to like walk into the closet where they've been storing Yoda at the very end of season two.
I want to see the bell guy from Ferrix, the guy who rings the bell with the hammer, you know, to signal the start of the day. And then at the end of the season one, he drop kicks someone out of his bell tower. Like, I'd love to see him again. in all seriousness, someone who I think would be interesting to see would be Bail Organa and maybe that sort of era cadre of political rebellion leaders. I think it would also be interesting to see Moff Tarkin if they would just like recast him and not do a creepy puppeting the dead thing with CGI again like they did in Rogue One. But I think he might be an interesting character.
Yeah, I think... Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say I don't know my answer to this question because, like, anyone I think of, it feels like too much Marvel, like, getting the gang together. So I guess my answer is nobody. It should be only the cast from season one.
That's valid.
That's totally valid. What about, you know, Grace earlier mentioned Vel and Cinta. I would also like to see the continuing story of their relationship and their role in the rebellion. I think it'd be cool to see more of Kleya as well. Do either of you want to go out on a limb and make any predictions there?
I think Kleya will continue to say, like, really snarky things. That's my prediction there.
Kleya is the antique shop lady.
Yeah, she's the his sort of assistant who is... She does not put up with his BS.
I would like to see more of her. I don't know what, but I feel like she was fun. And there were also because she had like a passing resemblance to Leia and her name is Kleya. people online were wondering, which it doesn't make sense chronologically, so I would love for them to clear that up.
Wait, people online were wondering if she's secretly Leia Organa?
Somehow Leia, yes.
Somehow.
I think we discussed this. Somehow Leia respawned earlier or something.
Wow, I didn't think that dialogue could get worse than somehow Palpatine returned, but then we got somehow Leia respawned earlier.
I'm a good writer, Eric.
No, it's not your fault. This is clearly someone's idea that's percolating out there. And I just have to say, they need to touch grass because that makes no sense. Name, it's very funny, though.
Her name is Kleya. They added one letter to it.
I think more than the possibility that Leia has been hiding in someone else's body this whole time, the more interesting question is, who is Uncle Harlow? Anybody want to weigh in? Anybody got any predictions? Who's Uncle Harlow?
The teaser trailer. Where's Uncle Harlow mentioned?
Who's Uncle? Yeah, I don't remember this. What?
Oh my goodness! He is Cyril's uncle who gets him the job in the typing factory.
Oh yeah.
Okay, hold on. Do we see him?
No, we don't. Okay, not yet.
So
anyway,
you're asking me to remember like one mention of a guy.
Well, I'm curious if he becomes important. The fans are wondering.
Palpatine.
Or he's Leia.
Somehow Palpatine respawned as Uncle Harlow.
There we go. Somebody call J.J. Abrams.
Cyril is the, like, child of Palpatine. And
Cyril
the father
is
of
Rey's twin brother.
They both have R and Y in their names, right? I mean, that's got to be something.
Someone here on Reddit, I've Googled this. Someone says it's Hondo Onaka, which is so ridiculous.
Now that is a reveal I'm here for.
There's similar letters involved.
Is there?
H-A and O.
Wow. Yeah, now you put it that way.
I didn't realize this was a conspiracy. I'm going to have to do a lot of research here.
Yeah, do your own research on this one for sure.
We're just asking questions.
All right, well, that does it for our Andor Season 2 prediction episode. Thank you all so much for listening. If you want to share your thoughts about this episode or suggest topics for future shows, you can email us at hothtakes@gmail.com, or you can find us on X. We are hothtakes. I am Eric Geller on X. Grace is Grace_Seegers, and Haley is Birdnator. Haley made our wonderful logo and banner art, and I edited the show and put together our music. Although we always want to point out that for legal purposes, all Star Wars music, sound effects, etc., are the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. You can find a complete archive of past episodes on our website, hothtakes.wordpress.com, and if you like the show, please share it with a friend. You can find Hot Takes on all the major podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. All right, we'll see you next time. May the Force be with you.